Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Stephen Hayward of Project X. Hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're going to have a great conversation. So please join us to welcome this week's guest on the Coffee Cast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Coffee Cast with Steve Hayward of Project X. Welcome, Graham. Welcome back.
It's great to be here, Stephen.
So it's we both have our Starbucks
cup number 205 with us.
I got 218.
Oh, you got 218. Oh, okay.
The way I see it.
Number 205. So it's like that old joke about the prisoners in the prison, and they've all they know the joke so much that they've just numbered them all. Everybody knows the punchline, and when somebody wants to tell a joke, they just say 305, and everybody laughs. Number 12, and everybody laughs. And then this guy's a new prisoner, and he says, number 14, and nobody laughs. And the guy says, what's the matter? And one of the other prisoners turns to him and says, well, some people can tell a joke, and some people can't. So anyway, when we're talking about the numbers on the side of the cups, you have to know what number we're talking about. So maybe Starbucks has on their website what each one of those things is, and people can go look them up.
I was reading in a magazine about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, where they actually have one of these as one of their quotes.
And so, we're drifting off the topic we were going to talk about, but it doesn't matter. I was having a conversation the other day about mission statements, talking about, you know, things that are quoted.
Yeah.
And someone said, what's your personal mission statement? And I said, my personal mission statement? I've got this real problem with mission statement as a concept, just because of the drivel that we went through in the 90s with business process reengineering and companies reinventing themselves, and everybody had to have a mission statement. And everybody's mission statement was, we will do wonderful things for our customers, and our employees are our most valuable asset, and yada, yada, yada. And became, in some respects, a joke around the organization. Oh yeah, our customers are really important to us, and oh yeah, our employees are our most valuable asset. Reminds me of a Dilbert cartoon they had where Dilbert goes on an off-site meeting, and they're gonna. And at the off-site meeting, the pointy-haired manager says, "Our theme this year is people are our most valuable asset." And as we all know, assets appreciate, so we're going to give each of you a form that is your asset depreciation value. And Wally's response in the last frame of the cartoon is, well, it's better than last year's theme, have you earned your air today? So, anyway.
My favorite analogy to mission and vision statements is, look to any city or town that's outside of the main hub. So like in Toronto, look at Oakville and Markham and Woodbridge and Vaughan, and all of them have almost the exact same mission or vision statement about somehow being close to the city but not in the city, and some cachet about it.
We want to be the bedroom community of tomorrow.
Exactly. Actually, a good segue into one of the things that we decided we would talk about today, which is a little bit about strategy, planning, tactics, how they relate to enterprise data warehouses or data-based systems, more from a higher level for me around service-oriented architected systems, which are the things that consume those enterprise data warehouses. And
interestingly enough, because you and I have been working on this, a bit of a capacity planning exercise for one of our clients, and so our minds are kind of thinking around this. And one of the things I've been getting my head around is, for the last 7 to 9 years, I've been working almost exclusively with OLAP systems, online analytical processing systems. And one of the systems we're looking at now is actually an OLTP system, and I have to get my head around online transaction processing. I fill in the acronyms for Jim.
Good for you.
So the you know, the difference between those two things. In one case, in the OLAP systems, we're thinking about big data and accessing large volumes of data and dealing with terabytes and terabytes of data and how do you scan through it quickly and get the information you want out of it and summarize and aggregate and all those things. And in the transaction processing world, we're thinking more in terms of TPS, transaction per second. How do we satisfy a user's requirement to either insert or update or select data in and out of that in a very quick and responsive manner? And it's just it's interesting to think about the differences of how we measure those two things.
Well, funnily enough, though, often there is a little bit of a crossover where there you can come up with some common language or common metrics. But the one thing I just wanted to kind of step in is just to define what we mean by when we talk about in this capacity planning versus capacity monitoring as being very different things. So if you look at, you know, is my disk being utilized? Is my CPUs being utilized? Making sure it's not going to break and fall down and the capacity hasn't created an issue within the monitoring space so that you could go and say, once I get above 60% or 70% utilization, you know, my monitor is going to say this is a possibility to go into a yellow zone. And then once I get above 90, it's red. And that helps me monitor for issues. What we're talking about is how do you get ahead of that and start looking at the business. And when they ask you a question and say, I want to go and do this, how do you do that?
You're right. There's a huge crossover, whether it's an OLAP system or an OLTP system, in when you get to a business question like that, when somebody comes to you and says, I want to do application X or I want to do application Y, how much capacity do you need on your system to satisfy the requirement for that? And there's a lot of dartboard exercise involved in that. In the case of OLAP systems, it's like, how much disk am I going to need to accommodate all the data that somebody wants to bring in?
Well, that's only assuming that you have a good model that means if I add disk, I keep my performance, right?
Well, yeah,
so on Teradata,
exactly.
That works. But if you're looking at an Oracle or a DB2, yeah. Just making that safe assumption, let me just add disk, doesn't hold water.
No, exactly. And that's the point that I was getting to is, and I think that that's the key item, is that in the OLAP system, we think in terms of disk and we make the assumption that the hardware and all the other supporting stuff around it is going to be there, and your key indicator is, you know, how many terabytes of data or how many gigs of data are you going to be adding to the warehouse and causing an impact on the performance of the warehouse as a result of that, and how do you adjust the hardware configuration as a result of that. And on the OLTP side, it's all about transactions per second. And so the key indicator on that side is more one of, okay, I've got so many users and they're executing so many transactions. I know that leads into all kinds of questions about, okay, what's a transaction?
And I think that's the big differentiator for me about going from monitoring to planning, is that if you're thinking about and only thinking about the data, and I don't mean the data in this case, the actual bits, but the data around that utilization, then you miss the point. Capacity planning is about thinking like the business and having a way to be able to respond to a business question that still takes advantage of all those lovely base metrics or base data elements to create good, usable metrics that are not having IT people throwing gobs and gobs of, well, it's at 60% and you'll be at 72. Well, that doesn't help anybody. And that's why in the SOA world, it gets really complex, because you're dealing with, well, I've built this web service or this service-oriented architecture core service. Now it's going to get utilized, and I built it once.
I don't know if I agree completely with part of your last statement.
Okay, go.
In that, from a propeller head's perspective, if I'm running at a 60% performance level and I know by adding a certain amount of load onto the system I'm going to go to 72% or 80% or whatever that number is, when I start to get up into that 70 to 80% utilization level, then you start to realize that that's an area where you can start to spike into the 100% utilization level. And when that happens, you know it's time to start reconfiguring your hardware platform and giving and providing more capabilities to your system. That's just general rule of thumb, the way you think about
your
business.
Sure, and I don't dispute that. It's just around, now how do you go to that person? You could have said, I can do that, and it doesn't cost you anything because I had that, and you're moving the chain, moving it up. But we have to tell them that there is a cost to being added and starting to consume our service. And it's almost, I had a great conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about, does this mean we're going back to pay per MIP?
Yeah, the meaning of MIP is either millions of instructions per second or a meaningless indicator of performance, depending on your
or it could be Michael
your definition.
Or it could be Michael Yanni Palarkio.
Or it could be Michael. Yeah. Anyway, but the whole concept of what is a transaction or what is a MIP or what is a gig of data really represent is you do have to. I mean, when we do that measurement on our EDW system, we say, here's the amount of disk you're going to need, and we use that just as a real simple way of defining what the usage is going to be from the user's perspective, because they want something really simple. Now, we know in behind that you've got disk, CPU, memory, network bandwidth, all of those other things, but it all focuses down on how much disk are you going to use, and then we'll figure all that other stuff out.
Because it's easy for you, because you know that it's storage capacity that you're ultimately they're looking for.
And
here's a different thing.
The same concept works in the TPS world, right? I mean, once you've come down to a realization that when we're talking about a transaction, what kind of a transaction are we talking about? Because everybody will know, so you've got a broad range of transactions and a transaction mix that says there's real simple selects, there's complex inserts where you're inserting to four or five tables, and both of those things are a transaction. So which one are we talking about? And you now have to get down to a point where you're saying, well, if we take some kind of a mean transaction rate, or we weighted average transaction rates, or whatever those things are, you still have to come to a point where you say, okay, based on the application you're describing to me, Mr. User, you're going to have a body of users that do pretty much just simple selects, and another body of users that are going to be doing some kinds of updates, and another body of users are going to be doing more complex kinds of things. And we're making an assumption that all of our reporting is going to be done on our enterprise data warehouse side. So let's not even get confused with somebody trying to think about doing reporting off an OLTP system as well. But, you know, that's going to happen too. But let's just take it off the table for a second. So you take that transaction processing as a level of, I'm sure it's a meaningless indicator of performance, but at least it gives you a place to start where you can say, we think this application is going to use this much resources. And based on that, now we can go off and we can say, this many transactions, this much disk, this much CPU, this much memory, this much bandwidth on the network. And all of those kinds of questions start to get answered as a result of just having a simple question. Because as you said earlier, and as it keeps coming back to us over and over and over again, the business doesn't care about the bits and the bytes and the disk and the blah, 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 blah. They want to know a simple number that they can work to, or a simple question that they can answer. And for us, it's how many users, what's the transaction mix going to be like, or what are the business kinds of questions that you're going to be asking of the application, and we'll figure out what the complexity of the transactions are based on those business questions. Because sometimes they don't even know, or they can't tell you what the transaction levels are going to be. They're going to say, well, you know, I'm going to have a guy who's in a call center, and he's going to be looking up at customer data, and these are the kinds of customer data he's going to be looking up. Okay, here's our model, here's what our customer database looks like, here's the number of call center reps you're going to have, here's the kinds of queries they can run. It's a very finite number of transactions, it's a very controlled environment, and you can, based on that, do all your extrapolations and calculations on capacity based on what the application people tell you they're going to be doing.
But if you could go and take it that, you know, in any given time, you can have an application that, say, for sake of just discussion purposes, has 100 core services. On top of that, there are another 10 composite services that were created. those are the ones that were customized for the use of that, and so we'll just take one of them or three of them, that IVR call center in that bank that wants to look up, is this a is this a common customer or is this a high value customer or whatever, and this system tells you whether it's a high value customer, and it's a customer information file, a KIF or a customer master file or MDM. You should be able to go and say, what kind of question are you asking of my system? Is it a batch question or an online transaction question? And then go and say, well, how often? To your point, then go and say, well, here's the three composite services that you're going to use. And I can now go and model, because underneath that, I know how it operates. And it gets back to, then you use all the sub-data that are performance metrics or monitoring metrics that help you know what the true consumption pattern of that composite service. But if the closer you are to the composite service, the further you are away from the data, the easier it is for the business or for that business analyst or systems analyst to answer the question and say, with a rough order of magnitude, this is what it's going to be, and your increase in capacity requirement for that project. Now, it's a lot more complex if you're building new.
Well, one of the advantages of a service-oriented architecture is that you can take a service, and because it's this finite object, you can run it 1,000 times and get 1,000 results and say that now I know this service costs this much
per,
from a resource utilization perspective, every time.
That's right.
You know, and then if you've got 100 services and 10 composite services or whatever the number is, you can say what the performance characteristics of each one of those things is, assuming you've got the time to sit down and do this kind of evaluation.
No, that's why if you go, instead of trying to boil the 100, and you only focus on the 10, because the 10 are go and consume that 100 sub core services in way, shapes, or form. It's like your analogy of, if I only tell you about disk, even though I know there's a bazillion things underneath the covers that need to happen in network and all that other stuff, it's the same thing. It just makes
exactly.
It, this person's going in and saying, I want this indicator.
Right.
And I'm going to come to you asking for it a bazillion times a day. So a bazillion times, we think it's a dollar a transaction or whatever. And the funny thing is, in some cases, especially with the online transactions, the volume helps decrease the cost. Because you'll get to a certain point where you're going to have to go to a step up, and you've been building to fill up that step up, but now you've got the thing, and all of a sudden it's, you know, to your point about when you're at 60, it's so much. When you're at 80, it's so much. Well, you're going to have a little bit of a curve that goes up and down in terms of...
That always happens in the world of computer performance, unless you can be really proactive about it. But, you know, you grab a whole new chunk of hardware and you drop it into your environment, and all of a sudden your performance characteristics go down, so you're using maybe 20 or 30%, where prior to the new hardware you were using 80 or 90% of your performance bandwidth. And everything goes along wonderfully, and everybody's happy, and everything's sweetness and light because there's no performance issues on the system at all. And then gradually over time, you know, more users get added on, and things get creep and creep and creep up, and all of a sudden you're up at that 70-80% mark again, and people start complaining, oh, performance is really bad on a Monday morning, what's going on at 10 o'clock on Monday mornings that causes performance to be bad? And you go look at the characteristics of the system, and sure enough, you're spiking up to 100 on Monday mornings because everybody's coming in and running all the queries they were thinking about on the weekend. So,
which is one of the funny things, and I know it's not necessarily always a real service, but the IBM's on-demand idea is really about how do you deal in this kind of a spiky, non-stable kind of environment to be able to go on demand.
Yeah, capacity on demand is an interesting way to deal with it. I mean, you've got all the hardware sitting on the floor, you've outsourced it to somebody or what have you, and they just have extra hardware sitting around so that, you know, when you do have those kinds of spikes, it's available to you.
And if you've got a nice wide enough pool, it means that over time you're going to know that this person's peak isn't the same time as this person's peak.
But, you know, Bounty's rule of thumb is capacity required is equal to capacity available plus 10%. So there's always
that in performance is always an issue.
And that in performance is always an issue, exactly. So I mean, the balancing of this cost of what is the cost of the infrastructure, as opposed to the value that the business is getting from that infrastructure, is always that fine line of, you know, do I have to really spend so much on the hardware to get the kind of performance I'm looking for? And that's always that back and forth kind of balance. Anyway. So you're back to that comment we were talking about, service-oriented architecture, when you're looking for that one number or that simple concept that you can take back to the business and say, you know, just tell me how many users you're going to have, or what that user mix is going to be like, or what that functionality is you're looking for, and I'll go back and, based on that functionality you're looking for, I'll then figure out how much hardware and what the platform is going to be like and what the application stack is going to look like and all those other things. There's still a bit of a gap in between the business and the technology on that, because, you know, in my thinking coming into this, I'm thinking, well, it's transactions per second, or it's, you know, a service can be, you can look at a service as being so many transactions that it's going to execute as part of its request, and then you can say, well, how many times is a user going to call a service? Well, again, we're talking in technical terms, right? You now have to take the services and you have to say, okay, this particular screen, this user input, where he's asking for a customer history or contact history with a customer. So the call center's had 3 calls from the customer in the last 3 days, and you want to draw that information out of your contact history database. Well, that's just, okay, that's a contact history request. It's one transaction against the database. It's a request for that, or maybe it's like 4 or 5, depending on how that service is developed. So now we've got still a bit of a gap. Yeah, I just want all the contact history for this customer, says the business. And the technology people say, okay, well, that works out to 4 services that get called, right? And so now those 4 services become how many transactions? And those, and how many seconds does it take to respond to that? And how many of those contact histories are we going to be expecting over the next month? Anyway, so it all rolls up or rolls down, depending on the way you want to look at it. But it's just, you know, getting your head around that. That's really the challenge of any capacity planning and monitoring exercises. Once again, that gap between here's what the business is thinking, I just need a call center that's effective, and here's what the technology guys are thinking. Well, we just need to build you a big platform and have a service-oriented architecture and an application stack that will support that.
And somewhere in the middle, reality meets.
And somewhere in the middle, reality meets. Yes,
so,
indeed.
Well, thank you, Graham. I appreciate you joining me on this lovely, bright, and sunny, and freezing cold morning. But it's getting warmer. Summer's coming soon. The Ides of March, or whatever it was the you were quoting earlier.
Yeah, the Ides of March is coming. It's the 15th of March. We're almost there.
Anyway, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Coffee Cast.
Thank you.
For more information about Project X, please join us on our website at www.pxltd.ca, or hop on our blog and join in the conversation at pxltd.typepad.com. This is a copyright of Project X Limited. Thank you for joining us today.